This episode of Gunblog Varietycast brought to you by LawOfSelfDefense.com. Go to LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety to learn about your state's self-defense laws. Sign up for one of their online or in-person seminars or buy the book Law of Self-Defense and get 10% off when you use the discount code VARIETY at checkout. That's LawOfSelfDefense.com/variety.
Welcome to another episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast with your hosts, Sean Sorrentino and Aaron Paulette.
Welcome to episode 100 of the Gunblog Variety Cast. How are you doing, Aaron?
I am excited. This coming Monday, I'm going to be interviewed by Cam Edwards on his show Cam & Company about Operation Blazing Sword. Now, this is just a huge milestone for us, and I can't wait to see what kind of support we're going to get after being recognized on a national level. Since this podcast drops Sunday night, if you can listen to Monday's episode during work, you should know that they're going to call me around 2:40 p.m., which means I'm probably going to be on air between 2:45 and 3. If you can't catch it, though, no worries. Each session is recorded and uploaded to iTunes that day, so you ought to be able to listen to it online by Tuesday. I've included a link to the Cam & Company podcast page. So how are you, Sean? I understand you and Dices had a bit of excitement this week.
Well, before we get to that, you're excited about going on Cam & Company, but this is episode 100, Aaron.
It is.
And you're worried about Cam & Company? Who cares? This is episode 100.
The full century.
Exactly. Can I get a little excitement about that? I mean, the heck with this Cam & Company upstart dude. I mean, who cares? 100 episodes, Aaron.
Yeah, that is impressive. It's a milestone. It's too bad Adam couldn't be with us.
That's true, but he's with us in spirit. When you get on Cam's show, I want you to make sure he understands the gravity of the fact that this is 100 episodes, Aaron. 100. Tell him one day he can be as cool as us.
I will certainly do that.
Yes, because I don't think you do enough self-promotion, Aaron. Not enough. I mean, you're, oh, well, we're doing this thing and we're doing that thing, but it's never me, me, me. Look about me. Look at me. Look at what I'm doing. I am the co-host on the greatest gun podcast in the history of podcasts. You should listen to us there. But you don't do that. Come on, Aaron.
I am chastised.
Okay, so back to Dices. You know, in the mornings, I walk my dog 3 miles. And it's a simple walk. I don't even have to remember where to go anymore. It's go out to the main road and walk down to the left until I hit the end of the road and come back. Well, there's been a couple of dogs who've been free down there, and they'll bark and they'll run around and they'll look kind of aggressive, but usually I just give them the dirty look and stomp at them and they run away. Well, this time one of them got bold and decided he was going to take a piece out of Dices.
Uh-oh.
So I kicked him. Well, what else am I going to do, right?
Where'd you kick him?
About half a mile from the end, right before you turn around. Oh, you mean on the dog?
Yes, where on the dog?
In his ribs.
Okay.
Well, that was what was available. I mean, there was something I would have much rather kicked, but I couldn't get to that quite quickly enough. And then the next time this happens, I'm going to pin him down and I'm going to beat him to death, quite frankly. His dog didn't learn the first time. I'm going to pick him up and I'm going to drop him head first on the pavement, because I've already sent Johnston County Animal Control after them. And they said they will send an officer out there to explain things to them. And if they can't keep their dog on the property and that dog comes after my dog again, it's over. The previous dog that we had trouble with, I think you heard about it, in the old house, that dog could be scared off.
Mm-hmm.
I scared that dog off a number of times. I think it tried to snap at my wife once, and I don't think he actually got teeth on my dog. It was a she, actually, now I think about it. That bad doggy didn't get teeth on my dog ever that I can remember. This one, however, came up and grabbed for the neck and got a hold of Dices's collar. Now, Dices has a breakaway collar. My wife filed down the buckle part so that if it gets caught on something, it breaks free rather than strangles the dog. I was busy getting away from this dog and wasn't paying attention to the collar having broken free and was laying on the ground. So I had to drive back down there afterwards and pick up the collar. So dog got a hold of my dog's neck. It wasn't just a, you know, was trying, but actually got a hold of it to the point where it pulled the collar off. And that's not going to work. Hopefully when Johnston County Animal Control gets down there and has a little chat with them, because I would much prefer those sort of problems be solved through official channels.
Yep.
To recap, 100 episodes.
100th episode. Woo!
And Cam will finally have a member of this podcast on his show. So make sure that he understands how honored he should be.
I will do that.
Awesome. Last week, Beth told us about the DC Project, a gathering of 50 women, one from each state, to lobby their legislators. This week, she tells us how it went.
Hi, Sean and Aaron. I am actually back at home now after a whirlwind trip. I am still not sure what day it is or what time it is, but I know that I promised last week that I would update everybody on how the DC Project actually went. For those of you who were listening last episode, you heard from a group of my fellow sisters in arms who were part of the DC Project, which is a wonderful collaborative effort of women across the United States who are coming together to make a difference. We actually had an opportunity to head out to Washington, D.C. as a group of 50 women from all 50 states to make time to get with our representatives, our congressmen, our senators, and hopefully share with them why the Second Amendment is so important to us. Basically, it was an exhilarating, exhausting, and amazing trip. One reason it was so amazing was just because of the women who were involved with this project. For those who are familiar with Kimberly Corbin, she's a rape survivor who stood up to President Obama at the town hall meetings asking why he would want to take away our right to protect ourselves. She's now a very strong 2A advocate. Along with Kimberly was Christy McMaines, a woman who was able to use her concealed carry firearm to stop the threat when she was recently viciously attacked after leaving work. Gabby Franco was also with us, and I think that's a very well-known name. Not only is she an instructor and an author, she was an Olympian, and she recently immigrated to America as she watched her home country of Venezuela basically collapse in socialism. Other ladies from competitive shooting included Becky Yackley, Corinne Mosier, Heather Miller, and of course Diane Mueller. She is an acclaimed three-gun competitor who actually is the one who began the DC Project. She was the one who came up with this idea that women should come together and reveal the face of the responsible gun owner. There were also hosts of women from different organizations like The Well-Armed Woman and A Girl and a Gun, who was one of the sponsors of the DC Project, along with instructors, range owners, radio hosts, writers, amazing ladies from all across our nation standing together and standing strong. Not only did we have the opportunity to look around Washington, D.C. and get in some sightseeing, but we met with congressmen, senators, and counsel for Chris Murphy, Jeff Sessions, Orrin Hatch, Joe Donnelly, Ken Buck, Trey Gowdy, just to name a few. And what was interesting, House Bill 5611, the no-fly, no-buy, was actually being voted on while we were there. We were met with a little bit of opposition. Of course, when you're in Washington, D.C., there are all sorts of people and protesters, and we were kind of worried that it would be a little bit more than it actually was, but supposedly there was a man in our own hotel that had a shirt with bloody handprints on it, and there was also one man who very vocally disrupted our rally by screaming nonsense about the dangers of guns. We also wondered what was going on when the Capitol building went on lockdown on Friday. Thankfully, nothing bad happened, and we were able to overcome all the opposition with poise and professionalism, and we were able to get our message across with no incidents whatsoever. In fact, the rally on Friday at 2 p.m. was outstanding. The speakers were diverse, the stories were so varied, but they were all very powerful and all speaking with one voice that, of course, supports our Second Amendment and right to keep and bear arms. I honestly don't know the experiences of all the ladies, and I don't know how much success we had across the board. I know that one of the representatives I spoke with basically said that oftentimes this is all just an exercise in futility. But in my mind, it was an exercise in freedom. It was our freedom to speak and share and tell our representatives to listen and to make sure they know that we care about the Constitution and about the Second Amendment, and we are watching. I'm 100% certain that this will not be the end of the DC Project, but it was definitely a wonderful beginning. I look forward to spending more time with these ladies and to doing more to speak out and to make a stand for what we believe in. That's basically all I have for now, so until next time, stay safe and be well armed.
You can read more from Beth at usconcealedcarry.com/blog and click on Pacifiers and Peacemakers in the left sidebar.
This podcast runs on your donations. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the donate or the subscribe button in the right sidebar. You can make a one-time donation of any amount or subscribe for as little as $2 a month. That doesn't sound like much, but we pay our server costs monthly. A little help from you is a big help to us.
Just this week, we received our first set of Gunblog VarietyCast stickers. They are 2-inch by 2-inch full-color stickers with the Gunblog VarietyCast logo. So how do you get one? Easy. Send us some audio feedback. Let us know what you're thinking. Record it on your smartphone and email it to me at sean@seansorrentino.com. If we play it on the podcast, you get a sticker. Make sure to put your mailing address in the email. Don't have anything to say? I'll send a sticker to anyone who donates $5 or more to the podcast. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and look for your donation options on the right sidebar. Don't want to use PayPal? Then send us an Amazon gift card. $5 or more gets you a sticker. And anyone who has already donated should be receiving them soon. Felons behaving badly. Felony charge in puppy theft.
Oh no.
A spunky little puppy is back home after police say he was stolen by a man hired to make house repairs. Sparky, a gray and white pit bull puppy, went missing from his crate last week. One of the women who lives at the East Ozark Avenue home said she was sleeping. When she awoke, she found the puppy's crate empty. Two men hired by the family's landlord had been in the house, hired to do some painting and put down new flooring. Family members said that when they noticed Sparky was gone, they saw that the hired hands were too, and they hadn't finished the work. Sparky's owners contacted their landlord and got the contact information for the man accused of stealing the dog. According to the family, the man refused to return the puppy, though he did eventually admit to taking it. By Sunday, the family had driven to retrieve the dog and filed a police report. An arrest warrant has been issued for suspect. The Concord man faces a felony charge of larceny of a dog, but the warrant had not been served as of Thursday afternoon. Sparky's owner said they were baffled by the incident and upset with the work the men provided. They have taken on the chore of painting and are waiting for their landlord to hire someone new to replace the floors. In the meantime, Sparky is still working on his potty training and enjoys greeting most visitors with a series of licks.
Aw, well, at least it has a happy ending.
Well, I found this video on WCNC.
During summer, a lot of homeowners decide to tackle home improvements, but with those projects often come bad contractors. The Better Business Bureau recommends doing your homework and looking into the company before hiring someone. That's something this Gaston County mom, unfortunately, learned the hard way.
Come to find out they wasn't contractors. One of them was his other tenant, and one of them just was released from prison.
Released from prison, you say?
Yep, it looks like he's got quite the extensive record. Drug paraphernalia, use, possess, misdemeanor class 3. Assault and battery, misdemeanor class 2. False fire alarm, misdemeanor class 2. 3 counts of larceny, misdemeanor class 1. Possessing stolen goods, misdemeanor class 1. Breaking and entering vehicles, felon class I. Larceny attempted, felon class I. 2 counts breaking and entering, felon class H. 4 counts of larceny, felon class H. Larceny of firearms, felon class H. Receiving possessing firearm, felon class H. And possession of a firearm by a felon. Felon class G.
Well then.
What happens when millions of people all go out and do the same thing all at once? Like moths to a flame, criminals flock to their potential victims. Baron tells us about it in...
Tech Tips. Tech Tips. Tech Tips.
You are damaging my calm.
Tech Tips with the Baron.
So Baron, what's new this week?
Beware of the popular and viral apps.
Pokemon Go?
Yep. Today we're going to talk about Pokemon Go, an app so popular that in 2 weeks it improved Nintendo's valuation by $8.7 billion. Right now, you can't really look anywhere without seeing it in the news, so piles of free advertising too.
It's all over my Facebook. There are wall-to-wall stories posted on social media, and while none of my friends will admit to playing it, they're at least trying to make funny jokes out of it.
Yep, and in no time flat, criminals were leveraging the popularity of the application. Let's start with the software side of things. A fake app appeared in the Android store a mere 72 hours after launch in Australia and New Zealand next week. End result, if you installed the malicious app, was a total takeover of your phone by attackers.
Well, that was fast.
Yep, and to make it worse, a lot of the people who were grabbing the app didn't bother double-checking the developer, though most of the people who were affected were attempting to get their hands on the app before it was available in their country. This means they were installing software from outside the Play Store.
Haven't you warned about the dangers of doing that previously?
Yep. Rooting your phone, while important for some people, removes some of the protections built in. Further, installing applications that basically have no reason to be trusted means you're going to get owned in the end. From here, though, we move into the physical realm.
I heard about this. Robbers using Pokemon Go to rob people, but that sounds like internet rumor mongering.
It was confirmed by the police. You can use the app to find where people are headed. Even more than that, you can actually do things to cause people to want to head there. You now have a couple pieces of information. One, you know they have a device worth a couple $100. You know where they're headed. Also, since they're playing a game, they will have a decreased situational awareness. I.e., it's easier for me to take your crap because I have a bunch of information to work with ahead of time and you have none. The deck is stacked in the robber's favor. So, if for some reason you do feel like playing, or if you have kids who play, go in a group, go with your kids, make it a family activity. As usual, carry your damn gun because it's a lighter burden than regret. Don't go chasing Pokemon in areas that would be unfriendly. For example, I'm not going to go find some in the city of Compton or downtown Detroit. Realize that while you may not be broadcasting your location purposely, others know where points of interest are and can leverage them to their advantage. So in other words, use your brain, trust your gut, and if something doesn't feel right, just let that little guy slip on by. It's just a game.
All right, Baron. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
Baron still blogs at the-minuteman.org.
The main topic, the scary evil features of an orange flare gun.
Yikes.
So, Vox.
Oh, Vox, you're so funny.
Vox decided that they were going to do this experiment, I guess. They got 2,000 people. They showed them a picture and a name of a gun and said, do you think these guns should be legal or illegal? And I'm really kind of wondering who it was that they actually talked to, because some of the responses are pretty scary.
Like the flare gun, a maritime safety device.
Yeah, a bright orange, clearly labeled as a flare gun, right?
Mm-hmm.
12% of people surveyed felt that the flare gun should be illegal. Only 74% thought that it should be legal. Of course, if you can do a little math, that means that 12%, or 240 people out of 2,000 went, oh! Are you kidding me? That was the one that had the most number of people who said it should be legal.
Well, that's reassuring.
Yes, great. Out of 2,000 people, 74% felt that it should be legal. Now, they show a picture of a Taurus 605, which, kind of glancing at it, not knowing much about Tauruses, I'm guessing that's a 38 revolver? Little sort of snubby?
I don't know. I don't know much about Tauruses.
Yeah. If you just look at the picture, it looks like a snubby. You know, short barrel, 2-inch, 2.5-inch barrel, maybe. 6-shot revolver.
Yeah, it looks like one of your generic detective specials.
Yeah. You know, if you don't know anything about guns, it really is your stereotypical detective special. 72% said that should be legal, and 13% said it should be illegal. Compare that to the 44 Magnum. I guess that's the Dirty Harry model, except it's chrome instead of... Oh, I see what the problem is there. The hammer's cocked in the picture.
Ah, well, that makes it even more dangerous.
Yep, that drops it down to 71% who said it should be legal and 16%. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The Henry Golden Boy rifle. Now, you looked that up. What exactly is a Henry Golden Boy rifle?
The Henry Golden Boy is a lever-action tube-fed .22 long rifle.
Right, so, like one step up above a BB gun?
Well, I think a .22 is a little bit more powerful than a BB gun, but...
Right, but if you were a young boy in 1950, you'd get a BB gun first.
Yeah.
And then if you were a very good boy and your mom and dad had some money and could buy a golden boy as opposed to just any other cowboy style lever action gun,
yeah,
you'd get one of these.
This rifle looks very much like the kind of gun you would either use for sporting purposes, plinking at the range, or you'd use it to harvest small animals to feed your family. Very much the kind of firearm that we have been told that no one is coming for.
Yep, and 17% said it should be illegal. 17%, that's 340 people out of 2,000 said, oh, we should ban that.
More people thought this rifle should be banned than people who hate handguns, which are used in far more crimes. That's what's getting me here. Although the pistols are okay, but we've got to get rid of this rifle.
Well, now, what? To be fair, it's only slightly higher percentage, but it is a higher percentage. I do note that none of the handguns that they showed were semi-autos. They're all like revolvers. There's two of them, a Taurus 605 and a 44 Magnum, which looking at it looks like a Colt Python. Except it can't be a Python. It can't be a Python because those are in 357. I'd have to blow the picture up and see if that's what it says on the barrel and see if they just mislabeled it. But honestly, it's a Colt. It's clearly a Colt because it has the pull type rather than the push type cylinder release. And it's got that vented rib and the writing along the barrel itself. So, I mean, it looks for all the world like a 6-inch barrel Colt Python. No Glock. No 1911, just those two. And a Golden Boy was less well received than the labeled 44 Magnum, whatever it happens to be. The Golden Boy.
Yeah.
How dumb is that? Oh, but wait, there's more. The Benelli Montefeltro. Now, if you had to describe that, what would you say it was?
Well, it looks like it's a semi-auto shotgun. I can't tell the gauge from here. It's likely either 12 or 20.
This looks like something that you could hand John Kerry and he could go blaze away at geese, right?
Yeah. In fact, it looks a lot like the kind of shotgun that Obama was seen shooting.
Okay. I don't remember what that one looks like, but yeah, you know, it's a bird gun. It is, as Tam would call it, a fowling piece. And only 65% of Americans were willing to go so far as to say that that should be legal. Seriously? These guns were relatively well accepted, right? They were not just barely acceptable, but like 2/3 or better of Americans said, yeah, you should be allowed to have those. And then we get to the Mossberg 500. You know enough about shotguns to at least know the difference between a Benelli semi-auto and a Mossberg 500 pump action, right?
Oh, absolutely.
What is the effective difference between the two to the person getting shot?
Little to none.
Exactly. But what does the picture show?
Well, the picture shows an evil black shotgun with more shells on the stock.
So it's got a little side saddle on the stock?
Mm-hmm.
And 52% of Americans said that that should be legal, right? The thing they tell you, oh, buy a shotgun, use that. That's your home defense gun. A full 30% said that should be illegal. Now, this one had the largest number of I don't knows. 19% or 380 people out of 2,000 went, I don't know. I don't know if that should be legal or not.
I really think the difference is because the Benelli has the handsome wood furniture and looks more like a sporting piece, whereas the Mossberg is looking all black and tactical, and it's got the extra shells on it, and it just looks, scarier.
It's because it's black, isn't it?
Yes, I think it is because it's black.
Speaking of evil black rifles, we get down to the evilest of all evil black rifles, the very next one on the list, with only 42% of Americans saying it should be legal and 42% saying it should be illegal, that deadly, scary, evil, nasty, rotten Remington Model 700.
Yeah, it's a high-powered sniper rifle with a scope so that you can shoot across neighborhoods and through engine blocks.
Right. I think what really did it there, though, is that they've got it mounted on a bipod.
Mm-hmm.
Because we all know that if you put a bipod on it, that makes it a military-grade sniper rifle.
It increases the lethality like 1,000%.
Especially if you happen to get your finger caught in that bipod? Have you ever had that happen? That really hurts.
Yeah, it can pinch something fierce.
Oh my goodness. I actually have lost blood to bipods. I mean, like, they scare me. I am not even joking. You think I'm making this up? No, I have lost blood to the bipod, and be careful of those things. But 42% of Americans are like, oh, we should totally ban that based on a picture. 42%. That is what people take out to hunt deer with. That's what I have in my closet for hunting deer, literally.
But remember, no one is coming to take your guns.
Exactly. All you hunters out there, no, you're totally safe. Only 42% of Americans want to ban it.
And only 42% say it should be legal.
But let's face it, you know, you win on the undecideds, right?
Yeah.
So 16% went, I don't know. Yay. And then we get down
undecided.
Then we get down to the AR-15, 24% say it should be legal, 62% illegal. The AK-47, it just goes down from there. 20% legal, 66% illegal. They have a picture of an Uzi submachine gun, and we went back and forth on that, but you've successfully convinced me that that is a full-size Uzi, not a micro or a mini. 13% say it should be legal, 74% illegal. And then this one I just don't get. Why is this picture here? It's a picture of an MG3. Now, I looked at the picture, and I said, oh, it's Hitler's buzzsaw. But you corrected me. What is it exactly?
The MG3 is actually the modern version of the MG42. It was designed in 1959. It was issued to the German army in 1960 and is their machine gun from then until present time.
So it's basically the very long barrel version of a German M60 machine gun?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, why they didn't use an M60 or an M240 or anything like that, I don't know.
Maybe the Belgians wouldn't sell them an M240.
Maybe.
I met Belgians. They don't much like the idea of selling things to the German army for various good reasons. In any case, only 11% of Americans said that the MG3 should be legal. I like you 11%. You guys are my friends. 75% agreed that that is totally wrong and should be illegal, with a further 14% saying, I don't know. And looking at the no opinions, it looks like the lowest amount of no opinions is 13%. So in every single question asked whether this should be legal or illegal, at least 260 out of 2,000 people went, I don't know. They really don't know. Now, here's the most important part of this. The thing that should really scare you more than anything. I'm going to quote directly. Perhaps unsurprisingly, Republicans were more likely than Democrats to say that a gun should be legal by about 20 percentage points. For example, about 80% of Republicans said the Golden Boy should be legal compared to 59% of Democrats. Among Democrats, 20%, that's 1 in 5, said all 11 guns should be illegal. And that includes the flare gun. 20%, 1 in 5 said ban them all, but nobody's coming for your guns. And 15% of Republicans said every one of them should be legal, including apparently the MG3, which I'm cool with if you can pay the money to feed that stupid thing. I mean, it's not like you're going to register that thing under the NFA and then come shoot up my house. Seriously.
But if you're willing to, Sean will get you his address.
He's not going to shoot up my house. Now, if you want to shoot in the backyard.
I thought you said shoot at your house. No, I shoot up my house.
No. That's a felony in this state. Shooting into an occupied property. It's also punishable by me shooting back.
Well, we don't want that.
Right. But if you want to, you know, take it someplace and shoot it, show me how it works, give me a few thousand rounds to just familiarize myself with it, I think we can work something out. 20%, ladies and gentlemen, 20% are like, ban them all, including the flare gun. I wish they would exclude the flare gun and then give me the percentage, because I bet it jumps.
Probably.
It just amazes me that 12% of the people asked said, oh yeah, ban the flare gun.
It looks like a gun. It's evil. Ban it.
Don't even know. And now a word from our sponsor. You know what will happen. If you ever have to defend yourself, you're going to end up in handcuffs. Are you trained to win the fight after the fight? Sure, you can draw, aim, and put 2 in the 10 ring, but have you learned your legal self-defense? Do you know the law? Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for your legal self-defense class. Each class is tailored to the laws in your state. Attorney Andrew Branca will teach you the law. Not just what the law says, but what the judge's legal opinions say, what the jury instructions say. Sure, you could risk spending the rest of your life in prison because you followed the advice of some gun store counter jockey, or you could spend the day with the man who literally wrote the book on the law of self-defense. Carry a gun so you're hard to kill. Know the law so you're hard to convict. Go to lawofselfdefense.com/variety to sign up for a legal self-defense class in your state, and make sure to use discount code VARIETY at checkout to receive 10% off. Now, not only can you go to the seminars, which I highly recommend, but you can also pick up a copy of Attorney Andrew Branca's new Law of Self-Defense 3rd edition, of which I have my own copy. And speaking of which, the person who won the copy that we gave away still hasn't contacted me. So, you all remember the George Zimmerman trial, and you remember one of the attorneys, Mark O'Mara. So, what does Mark O'Mara say about this book? He says, I urge everyone who owns a firearm for self-protection to read this book. I wish all my clients had read it before they found themselves in a potential self-defense situation. What you learn can mean the difference between going to jail or going home. So this is one of the guys that won the George Zimmerman Trayvon Martin case. And he's saying, you need to read this book. If you carry a gun, you need to read this book. With the fallout over the police murders in Dallas, and the police-involved shootings that sparked the protest in the first place, it's been a pretty rough week for Tiffany. Tiffany reminds us that what happens to us may be out of our control, but how we act is.
Hi, Sean. Hi, Aaron. I hope you all had a better weekend than I did, but suffice it to say, it's been a very hard week. Few weeks, I guess, but particularly in light of recent events, things are pretty troubling. So I guess what I wanted to do today is start out by sharing with you a few of the sentiments that I happened upon internet forums this weekend. And I apologize to our listeners for the language, but here's just a spattering. One person said something about there being too many animals living in this country. I'm not sure if it was a reference to the Black Lives Matter movement in general or the particular protesters in Dallas or in Missouri. Another person said, most of them are just ignorant. Another said, BLM and the culture that allows them to exist. One that was particularly startling to me was a person who said, if these want a war, they pick the wrong place to start it. There were a lot of posts, of course, attempting to assign blame for the awful, unspeakable tragedy in Dallas. Some posts blamed the Black Lives Matter movement. One blamed black ghetto culture or the Nation of Islam or Islam more generally. Others blamed leftist media and said that the leftist media has blood on its hands. And then, of course, there were others who blamed the president. One says the lion's share of blame for this rests with Obama, to which another person added, he, meaning Obama, desperately needs to FOAD. For those of us who don't know what FOAD means, I'm sure I've littered the podcast with enough profanity as it is, so I will invite the listeners to just Google the acronym FOAD and see what it means. But essentially, it encourages the president to die. I guess my question after reading all of that, which was posted on public forums, is what is it helping? I can completely understand some of the sentiment behind those kinds of statements. I can certainly understand the emotions behind it, because after all, we have 5 dead, brave police officers. And that's not even to begin to speak of the others who might have died but survived. So I understand that emotions are running high, but we all need to keep a level head here. We all do. There's so much at stake. There are no words to adequately express just how much is at stake here. And that's not melodrama. Things are about to ignite here. Everything is balanced on the edge of a knife. And each person at this point really has a responsibility to decide whether or not he or she wants to be the water or the flame. Other posts were unique in their misapprehension of the facts. One person veered into a slightly different topic and said something that I hear often as a retort against the Black Lives Matter movement, which is, why is no one talking about who's really killing all the black people? They didn't really elaborate, but I assume this is a reference to quote-unquote black-on-black crime. If so, then that statement is simply false. There are lots of people talking about inner-city crime, street crime. It's talked about all the time at the local level. It's just not newsworthy. Certainly not for national news. And it just doesn't get reported. But that doesn't mean it doesn't happen. So stop perpetuating that myth. I myself have personally attended several events aimed at precisely that, stopping or at least minimizing local, interpersonal street crime, which is committed among individuals at arm's length and is almost always committed within races. So not to veer off on a tangent here, but this is the problem with the black-on-black crime argument. All crime is race on that same race. Almost all crime, I should say, the vast majority. It's because most black people tend to be around black people and most white people tend to be around white people. So most white crime is white on white crime, just like most black crime is black on black crime. But if we want to talk about street crime in general, regardless of who the victims are, it's simply false to say that no one is talking about it. And yet that's what someone posted on the internet. Another person said, white old farts in the country aren't starting mass gunfights. Well, that is false. I mean, white people do start gunfights. So please don't make it sound like black people are the only ones out there shooting people. Another person posted that the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department argues that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 does not protect white people. I'm not going to argue about what the Civil Rights Division specifically argues, but suffice it to say that the United States Supreme Court and the law itself have both explicitly state that it prohibits discrimination against members of any particular race. McDonnell v. Santa Fe Trail Transportation Company, 427 U.S. 273, 1976 case. It also cites a previous U.S. Supreme Court case, Griggs v. Duke Power Company, 401 U.S. 424, 1971. Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits discriminatory preference for any racial group, minority or majority. Period. End of story. So how is it helpful to perpetuate the false narrative that there's some group out there seeking to limit the anti-discrimination laws to black people? I guess what I'm getting at here is now more than ever, we need to stick to the facts. All of us, those of us who pride ourselves on being thinking, rational beings, especially if you're one who holds a particular grudge against some other group of which you claim not to be a part, take particular pride in distinguishing yourself from those groups if you find them to be so reprehensible. Don't be them. Don't let their actions justify you returning the favor in kind. Instead, just try to be above those groups. Otherwise, you lose your right to complain about them. One person posted, "The drug trade and criminal activities thereof is integral to the modern black culture." First of all, if you're going to talk about somebody's culture, try to have correct subject-verb agreement while you're doing it. Secondly, broad generalizations like this are just not helpful. If you don't have the time to be precise in your accusations, then don't bother making them. Broad strokes are the last thing that we need right now, on either side, on any side, regardless of your political stripe or your race. If you're not going to be helpful at this really, really critical time, just shut up. Just don't say anything. And that goes for everybody. Because over the past few days, I've just been absolutely horrified at how eager everyone has been to perpetuate misinformation, to speak in broad generalizations that are doing no one any good. I can't tell you how many times I read about triangulated fire and bombs all over the city and self-inflicted gunshot wounds and shooters turning themselves in, and the shooter had dreadlocks, and oh, there were six snipers, and the shooter was Muslim, none of which ended up being true. And I can understand folks having initial gut reactions and early suspicions and that sort of thing, and that's fine, that's human nature. We're going to revert back to past experiences when we encounter new ones, especially if they are emotionally traumatic. But we have a responsibility as rational, freedom-loving adults who respect the rule of law to restrain ourselves to the extent our premature assumptions may stoke the flames rather than quelling them. So I say to my Black friends, to protesters, to folks who have suspicions about recent incidents with the police, don't be so quick to use words like murder and assassination. Those are false. None of that is true. We don't know any of that to be true yet. We don't have the facts. Don't say that the victims of police shootings were innocent or did nothing wrong. You don't know that. You weren't there. You didn't see it. Even when there's video, you can't tell what's happening. The video only shows one angle. It only shows one perspective. It doesn't show what happened before the video started, and it doesn't show what happened after the video ended. So just be quiet. Stop spreading hate. I know that we're all tempted to do so. We get angry. We feel violated. We want to speak up and speak out. And that's okay. That's human nature. But we all have to do what we can to avoid catastrophe here, to avoid further catastrophe. We all have to do our part. So everybody, please stop appointing yourself the Facebook philosopher or the cyber sage, because you don't know it all. You don't know. You don't know what other people are thinking. You don't know what other people are feeling. You don't know what other people saw or said or did. So worry about your own contributions to what's going on before you jump to worry about other people whom you've never met. Whether you're white or Black or protester or police officer, I just beg of you to do humankind that favor right now, please. Yes, Black Lives Matter. Yes, Blue Lives Matter. Yes, all lives matter. But you know what matters more than anything else right now? Facts. Facts matter. Logic matters. Do whatever you can to find the objective, rational part of your being and let it win over the emotional, passionate part. Because all of society hangs in the balance right now. So that's my perhaps overly melodramatic commentary on the events of the past week. And I apologize for yapping away for probably way too long, but thanks for listening. Now, I hope that everybody out there has a much better week than we had last week. I hope you stay safe. I hope you hug your family and keep it centered and even. Thanks.
You can follow Tiffany at frontsightpress.com.
So Tiffany sounded really, really rough in that segment, and I got to tell you that after I heard it, I got on Facebook and I sent her a message saying, "Are you okay? Can I give you a hug? Because you just seem really bad." And she let me give her a virtual hug, and that made me feel better, because it's just rough listening to my friends who were really torn up by something, and you can just hear the emotion in her voice, how important this is to her.
Exactly. And I've been actually using the bridge, or a bridge, or the word or the concept of bridge a number of times since I met her and since she's joined the podcast. I'm really pleased that she's bringing this viewpoint to us, because we need to hear things that aren't exactly mirrors of what we already believe.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's time for Blue Collar Prepping with that bratty kid sister of the Gun Blogosphere, Erin Paulette.
Come on, every pony. It's time for Blue Collar Prepping with Erin Paulette.
Erin, I've been watching the news and I'm concerned with how Black Lives Matter protesters have been blocking roads with their protests. How do I prepare against that?
Geez. Okay, this is a political minefield. So before I begin, let me get something clear. While I understand BLM's position, and to some extent I agree with it, after all, Operation Blazing Sword is essentially a Queer Lives Matter, I think that the protests which block streets are absolutely the wrong thing to do, because not only are these turning away potential allies, they're also endangering lives. Last weekend, there was a sick baby who was being taken to a hospital in Memphis, and the parents couldn't get there because a BLM rally was blocking the bridge. The parents had to call an ambulance, which was escorted by the sheriff's department the wrong way down the interstate. The parents then handed the baby to the paramedics over the highway dividers, and then the ambulance had to go 25 minutes out of its way to get to the hospital. The good news is it got there in time, and the baby is all right. I actually asked Tiffany in that same conversation what she thought of BLM, and she responded with just a big ol' sigh. And then I said, were I to guess, I would say that it's similar to how the gun community regards Open Carry Texas or Leonard Mbadi, you know, one of those, geez, stop helping and get off our side. And her reply was in all caps, exactly. So with that said, here's what you do to prepare for these kinds of blockades. First, the best way not to get stuck in a protest is simply not to be there in the first place. Listen to the news, read the paper, and generally have knowledge of where and when a protest is going to be. If you know that, you won't get stuck. Second, have alternate routes ready. And this can be as simple as having a smartphone app like Waze route you around the blockage, or you can consult a map before you go. But it's best to know a way out or around before you leave in your car. Third, make sure your car is in good working order with a full tank of gas. The last thing you want is to be stuck in traffic for hours with no air conditioning or run out of gas and have to call someone to pick you up or to tow your car. Finally, have patience and don't do anything aggressive. I have seen too many videos of people speeding through BLM protests, striking or running over the protesters. Don't do this. I understand that you may be late to work or irritated at the delay, but let patience win the day. Because the very last thing you want on your conscience is an injury or death, and you definitely don't want to be arrested by the police for aggravated assault or vehicular manslaughter. Instead, just take a breath, try your best to relax, and maybe catch up on a book on your Kindle or watch something on Netflix on your tablet. If, however, you are at the front of the protest and you need to get through, here is what you can do. You keep your foot off the accelerator and let the vehicle move forward at its natural speed. This is slow enough that anyone who wants to get out of the way can do so, but ought to be strong enough to discourage people from blocking the car. Once the way ahead of you is clear, you can safely accelerate away. However, be warned, protesters may pile in front of your car and try to slow it down. They may even start beating on it. Again, I need to remind people, your car is property and can be repaired or replaced. Human lives, especially your own, cannot. The only time you can take action is if you feel the protesters are a danger to you or the other occupants in your car. For example, if they break the windows or open the doors and begin reaching inside, and that is the only time you can legally act against them, preferably by accelerating away, because that shows your intent is to retreat and not to harm. I don't want anyone dragged out of their vehicle and beaten like Reginald Denny was in 1992, but I also don't want people run over either. So again, I stress, the best case scenario is not to get stuck in a situation like this at all. Stay informed, stay away, and stay safe.
I think now would be a really good time to remember what Adam had to say about vehicles. Rule number one of being in a car is stay in the car. And rule number two is if the other guy gets out of his car, or in this case, they come after you because they're a mob, remember, you are in a car. Drive away.
Yes.
Not only can you subscribe or donate to the podcast, you can also make a contribution to the LGBT Training Ammo Fund. Go to gunblogvarietycast.com and click on the LGBT Training Ammo Fund donation button in the right sidebar. I'll use this money to pay for range fees, targets, and yes, ammo for the people I teach. And thanks for your support.
This week, Weird wasn't content to give us just one Audio Fisk. He gives us four for the price of one. In
this week in anti-gun nuttery.
So hey, Weird, what do you got for me this week?
So this week, I'd like to be dealing with the aftermath of the racist attack on the Dallas police officers, who were just simply keeping the peace at the Black Lives Matter protest. But there isn't much for me to work with at the time of this recording. All I have is this brief statement by our president.
Today is a wrenching reminder of the sacrifices that they make for us. We also know that when people are armed with powerful weapons, unfortunately, it makes attacks like these more deadly and more tragic. And in the days ahead, we're going to have to consider those realities as well. In the meantime, today, our focus is on the victims and their families.
Of course, the idea that a 5.45 by 39 millimeter rifle was a powerful weapon is a little foolish. Much like the more deadly attack at Virginia Tech, the effectiveness of this attack was not in the weapon, but the tactics used by the killer and the tactics used by the responding officers. The Virginia Tech killer only had pistols, 10-round magazines, and minimal firearms experience. The tools are irrelevant. Also, did you hear that? President Obama outlines his plans for gun control and then tells us we need to focus on the families of the victims. Wonder when he's going to start doing that himself, rather than making bold political postures from a position of ignorance. Next up, I have a clip from Matt Damon.
Matt Damon!
Maddie's in Australia promoting the latest Jason Bourne movie, and gun control came up.
And gun control, for example, how much do you think that's a debate that's coming up? It's really just...
You know, it's you guys did it here in one fell swoop, and I wish that could happen in my country.
Time and time again, we hear, no one's going to take your guns, but here's Matt Damon.
Matt Damon!
Saying, wouldn't it be great if we could just ban all guns like you Australians did? It's not even like Matt Damon.
Matt Damon
is alone in his calls for Australian-style gun confiscation. Barack Obama loves him some Australian model.
We know that other countries, in response to one mass shooting, have been able to craft laws that almost eliminate mass shootings. Friends of ours, allies of ours, Great Britain, Australia.
And so does Hillary Clinton.
Certainly the Australian example is worth looking at.
But Maddie thinks the issue is too personal.
It's such a personal issue for people that we cannot talk about it sensibly. Mm-hmm. We just can't. People get so emotional, and so that even when you make a suggestion about like keeping people, you know, I mean, not selling AK-47s to people on terror watch lists, you know what I mean? That's like a non-starter.
Who's being emotional? You're the one talking about selling AK-47s to terrorists. First up, the US government does that. And we don't sell them, we give them. Namely to the Mujahideen during the Russo-Afghan War and the Mexican drug cartels through Operation Fast and Furious. What sensible gun owners oppose is totally removing somebody's rights because their name is on a secret list, with no judicial oversight and no clear means to remove the names of innocent people. And the big one, it's called the Terror Watch List, but as far as I know, it contains no actual terrorists. The homophobe who murdered the people in Orlando was a terrorist, but not on the list. The couple who murdered their co-workers in San Bernardino were terrorists, but not on the list. The brothers who bombed Boston were terrorists, but not on the list. The soldier who shot up Fort Hood was a terrorist, but not on the list. I could go on for a while, but I think you get the picture. We had a reasonable conversation, and your side lost, Matt. Also, I couldn't resist looking over Maddie's page on the Internet Movie Firearms Database. For somebody who's so anti-gun, he makes a lot of money pointing them at people. To close us out, I thought I'd bring up some clips of Penny Okamoto of Ceasefire Oregon. This first is from right after the murders in Orlando.
She's the leader of a group called Ceasefire Oregon, which has lobbied for tougher gun laws in the state for more than 15 years.
Okay, if the gun is just a tool, let's make that tool safer. Let's make sure we've got chamber-loaded indicators on that. Let's make sure we've got magazine disconnect mechanisms. And let's get rid of the assault weapons, because those are not safe weapons.
Okamoto also wants Oregon to put in place an assault weapons ban and something called an extreme risk protective order.
It allows an avenue, a way for people to have guns temporarily removed from people who could become violent and hurt themselves or others.
Can you believe how tone-deaf she is in this interview? The only point she made that was even remotely relevant was that bit about the assault weapons ban. Yeah, the killer in Orlando used what was considered an assault weapon under multiple jurisdictions. But California has a very onerous assault weapons ban, and did that stop the terrorist in San Bernardino? And what the hell do loaded chamber indicators or magazine disconnects have to do with anything? besides, of course, being your agenda, and you might as well say it when there's a camera pointed at you. Also, I'd like a pony and a gold-plated Rolls Royce.
And world peace.
And the last thing she said was about protective orders. Implementation of them currently fly horribly in the face of due process. But the killer in this case was a domestic abuser. But what good did it do when his wife made no attempts to report him? But one more, less effective law would help? Last is a really foolish interview with Okamoto pushing for a lost and stolen law in Oregon. I found this via the Laughing at Liberals channel.
11 states have laws requiring gun owners to report lost or stolen firearms. Oregon and Washington aren't among them.
That's really what they're taking a look at.
Ceasefire Oregon says that leaves an out for gun owners who sell firearms to people barred from owning them, so-called straw purchasers, if that gun ever ends up being used in a crime.
That person can simply say, well, that gun was lost, or that gun was stolen. Well, did you file a report? Well, no.
Michael at Laughing at Liberals points out that Oregon has a universal background check law. So not only is straw purchasing a very serious crime, but currently any sale not done with a NICS check is a crime as well. Not that anyone's been prosecuted for it. The law is redundant and pointless. But it's gun control, so the anti-gunners support it! You wonder why I roll my eyes every time they say they want a rational conversation.
Alright, Weird. It was good to talk with you. I'll see you again next week.
See you next week, Sean.
In addition to appearing here, Weird is a regular host on The Squirrel Report and blogs at weirdworld.com. That's W-E-E-R-D world.com.
Plug of the week. So what do you got for us, Aaron?
Well, I have something great coming out of my hometown. The Big 3 East Training Center in Daytona Beach, Florida is offering free gun safety and familiarization classes to anyone, not just LGBTQ people, every Saturday starting later this month. And it's not just pistols, but AR-15 and AK-47 familiarization as well. They're partnered with Century Arms, Wolf Ammunition, and Spikes Tactical, who have provided ammunition and rifles for this training. And this is precisely what I wanted when I started Operation Blazing Sword. People offering training in the basics of firearm safety and operation absolutely free. There's a video link in the show notes below if you want more information, but right now I just want to give a big thank you to Big 3 East, Spikes Tactical, Century Arms, and Wolf Ammunition for doing this absolutely free. You are a credit to the gun community.
Wait, Big 3 East Training Center isn't? You went there, didn't you?
Yeah, they had a spring media event where I saw all sorts of cool new things that were coming out. And I assume I'm going to be invited to their fall event in October, and I'm looking forward to seeing them all.
Yeah, you said they were really nice people.
Yeah, really great people. I mentioned it was a lot like Gunny Summer Camp. You know, you get up in the morning, you have breakfast, you see the presentations, kind of like show and tell in the morning, you have lunch, and then afterwards you're set free to wander the grounds and you can interact with the different vendors, talk to people, you can shoot their guns. It was just a really cool experience. I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And what you said here a minute ago about what you wanted to do with Operation Blazing Sword, people offering training for free. Why is it important to you that the training be free?
Well, it's important for two reasons. Because first of all, as we all know, guns are expensive. And we want to remove that obstacle for people because we want people to experiment with firearms and find out if they are right for that particular person. And so if we make it free, we remove one more excuse. Well, I don't know, I can't afford it. The other reason, and this is the far more important one, is because in the wake of a shooting, when people buy guns, we are accused of selling to fear. And if we make this absolutely free, we can state with absolute honesty, we aren't selling to fear, we aren't selling anything. We are educating for free. And then these people, once they are educated, can then make their own informed decision. And that's why it's important that these courses be free.
I think you're right. It's pretty obvious that there's a huge barrier to entry, just cost. They're just so expensive. In order for you to go from zero to concealed carry in North Carolina, you're looking at about $1,000 because it's $500 for the gun, all the accessories you got to buy the training, the money you have to pay to the sheriff in order to get the permit itself, you're looking at about $1,000.
That's about what I paid when I got my permit and gear as well.
It's an enormous investment. Now, it hadn't occurred to me that, oh, people were going to accuse us of trying to make money off of a tragedy. It seems like kind of a stupid thing for people who are dancing in the blood to say to people like us, but it is nice to not have that as something they can attack us over.
Yep.
Well, that's our show for the week.
Find the show notes at gunblogvarietycast.com/episode 100. Woohoo!
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Gunblog Variety Cast. Music courtesy of Rob Allen at blog.roballen.com. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Google Play Music. This podcast is made possible by the Firearms Policy Coalition and by contributions from listeners like you. This is a URS production.